My God, this music, the sense of foreboding. They must be talking about the Leafs. There should be a casket coming out now or something. Here we go.
Come into my room. Come into the Air Canada Center.
Oh, now there
we
go.
Oh, now I get it. Bagpipes.
Suddenly it makes sense. It all is coming clear now. It's that time of year again, isn't it?
It is.
When this show, the leaves fall and the baseball show gets an hour shorter.
That's right. And we bring in the Pied Piper of Puck. What's another thing that starts with P?
Stop. Quit while you're ahead.
Glenn Healy.
Piping in the Leafs.
Piping in the Leafs. Or piping out the Leafs. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. Joining us on the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brown. Hello, Mr. Healy.
Name that tune. Come on. You guys are the hosts.
I don't know.
Something on the air. You should know the name of that tune.
No, you got to... We don't know anything.
It could be the...
Oh, I know what it is. That's, it's Hellbound Train.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That could be the story for the Leafs season. Now, that was the only piece of music when I played with the Leafs that I was actually allowed to put on the team stereo in the dressing room. That one piece of music. That was it. So you always had someone who ran the stereo, and it, at the time was Brian McCabe, and he had all his dance stuff on and the fancy kind of stuff that I really don't like. And I was allowed to put that on. It was about halfway through the year. I looked around, and we'd play the tune probably at the same time each game night, and I'd be the only one in the dressing room thinking, okay, these guys really don't like this, do they?
Well, the Dropkick Murphys weren't around when you played, right?
No, they weren't, no.
Because then you could have at it with the Dropkick Murphys.
Totally. But
I mean, I know that's Irish piping, but that's kind of okay, isn't it?
So all I got was Hellbound Train.
All right. Well, it is fitting because we are going to ask you about the Leafs. So let me ask you this. Will there be at least a stop in purgatory? Or is this team going straight to hell in a handbasket right away?
No, I think that they've recognized where they are in their development. They know that they have to send the kids into a situation where they can succeed, which means they have to learn how to play like men. And that requires you to go to the minors. They've pretty much done the right thing, I think, with all those players that are going to go down and learn how to be a pro. It's important. I mean, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, you look at a guy like Duncan Keith, we forget he spent two full years in the minors before he came up to be a star. Their goalie spent 5 years in the minors, and Crawford parts of 5 years before he came to be a star and win a couple cups. So that requires time, and they've put some players in positions now with short-term deals, and those short-term deals are veterans that have to go out and prove that they should get a little bit of a longer-term deal. And so you're going to be playing, if you're a guy with any experience, every day to try to play your craft one more year or two more years. So I think they're going to be exactly what we all know they're going to be. There's no expectation. They will not be worse than they were last year, but they will work and they'll play with structure.
Glenn, what did you, during the time when they, you know, during their fall audition, understanding that they were going to get sent down, what did you see from Nylander, Marner at all? You know, how bright is the future, near term, longer term?
Well, I think the future obviously is bright. You don't get drafted that high, that, you know, all the way through your career if someone doesn't see something in you. You know, I recall Nylander when in 2008 I was in Washington and I had to do some work for the Players Association. There was these two young kids on the ice and the skill level was through the roof in 2008. I said, whose kids are those? Because it was just after Washington practiced and it was Michael Nylander's kids. And even in 2008 when they were just youngsters, I saw talent that I thought, I haven't seen this in kids in a long time. So that's one of the reasons you draft them as high as they do. They obviously don't care about the size, and that's kind of the Detroit model. Detroit didn't either when they drafted guys like Tatar and Nyquist, and they were of the smaller sort. But now you've got to find ways. You've got the skill set. Now you've got to improve the knowledge you have as a player to learn how to play like a pro, and they don't have that yet. They don't know how to play without the puck. But more important, kind of the intangible side of the ledger. So that would be what Mike Babcock considers two kids in a hotel hallway, two mini sticks, one ball. Who wants the ball more? And that's what they'll learn. And, you know, it's going to take time because they've got some things going against them, size being one of them. But I still think that they are skilled kids with a bright future.
You know, it seems to me, Glenn, that what we're seeing here as well is the Leafs are, and I'm not going to say they've taken a page from Tampa Bay, but they've the idea that you can kind of grow a group down in the minors and bring them up and let them have maybe have a develop a track record of success in the minors, then come up almost as one and hit the ground running in the NHL, which we've seen with Tampa, maybe more so than any other team. But my question is this: as good as this team could be in the American Hockey League, you know, you've got to have some sort of foundation at the NHL level. It's not like you can bring everybody up and say, okay, great, we got four guys from the Marlies. They had a little bit of success. Now all we have to do is go out and add 19 more guys, and we're good to go. And what concerns me is, I agree with you. We all know what this season's going to be like. But when I hear Mike Babcock last week talk about how he has to spend more time explaining drills than actually teaching, the first thing I come away with thinking is he's got a lot of pretty dumb veteran players.
Well, I think there's some elements to that, and I'll take you back to a story in the Stanley Cup Finals, and I was down at the bench watching Chicago practice, and I thought I was watching the Harlem Globetrotters. It was incredible, their pace, their execution, every pass on a player's stick, everything done at high speed, tempo absolutely incredible. And I said to Jonathan Toews, it's pretty impressive. He says, yep. He says, you know, we were watching Buffalo practice last year at the end of the year, and all of us, there were about seven of us on the bench, thought, what a dreadful practice. Like, if we practice like this, Joel Quenneville would kick us off the ice in 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the difference in a team that gets it and knows that you have to execute and practice almost as hard as you play. Then they're not there yet. They certainly aren't. Some of their games didn't have the pace last year that Chicago's practices had. And the same happened in New York when I went to the Rangers. I couldn't believe the pace of practice with Mike Keenan. I mean, there was no verbal commands for drills. It was a whistle, and the drill started immediately. You had to be in shape just to practice to keep up to the pace of the star players we had. And I think that's more the element he's talking about, you know, playing the right way, but it starts in practice. If you don't practice the right way, you don't do it with pace, you don't do it with execution, then how do you expect to do it in a game? And I think that's where he's at. And we watched Detroit for all those years where the hardest workers were guys like Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Lidstrom. Well, now he needs the best players in Toronto to get it that they better be the hardest workers, because if they're not, the team won't win.
Let me throw out three names to you. You tell me who's going to improve the most under Mike Babcock. James Van Riemsdyk, Dion Phaneuf, and I'm missing the third. No, Nazem I'm not. Kadri. Nazem Kadri.
I would say the first two would be the ones that you would see noticeable difference in. And the one thing about Dion, whether he's a fourth D or a second D or whether he plays 25 minutes or 21 minutes, in defense to Dion, he doesn't take a shift off.
Mm-hmm.
He works every shift. It's just whether he has the capacity and the ability to work that shift against some of the great players in the league, whether he's slotted in the right spot. Well, that's not really his fault, and the contract isn't either. That's probably why some of the people that signed him to it aren't here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All that being said, you know, JVR, I think, and Phaneuf will be the two guys who will get it figured out pretty quick. And if you watched, you know, the second last exhibition game of the year for the Leafs against Detroit, after being called out in the game previous, JVR played probably one of his better games. Whether Nazem has the ability to learn to be a pro and to play the right way, he will frustrate Babcock the most, because Mike is really concerned about what you do without the puck. And some players just aren't so concerned. When I don't have it, what I have to do.
Beyond those guys, Glenn, when you're talking about, Jeff, talking about the foundation being laid, the team that's going to be there when the young players are ready to make the move. What else do you have? Do you have a number one goaltender? You got Morgan Rielly, who presumably is a first pair defenseman. Beyond that, you know, what do you have here?
Well, I think if you were to ask your kids today, go out and buy a sweater. Who's your favorite player for the Leafs? Who's the star on the Toronto Maple Leafs? Do they have one? Really?
No.
Can you say that about any team in the league? Every team in the league seems to have a star, and they don't seem to quite have one. And Kessel probably would argue be their only star, and he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But Morgan Rielly, to me, is the real deal. He's a guy who will stick it out thick and thin, and he'll be here when this process is finished. And I'm not so confident that you could probably name three other names that'll still be here when this is all said and done. Because you really, you know, you look at Detroit over the weekend, they've got two goaltenders that could be the starters. Neither of them lost a game preseason. And both are looked at as stars. And in the Leaf net, you're going to have a battle all the way through. And if you're the goaltender, you better be the best player on the ice, because this team didn't look like it knew what it was doing structurally through the preseason.
All right, I'm not going to ask you who's going to win the Stanley Cup. We'll do that at some other time. But I will ask you right now, who are the teams to watch? Who are the teams that you think are Stanley Cup favorites or Stanley Cup contenders?
Well, the one that jumps out to me is Anaheim. And only because it was just the will that Chicago had that beat them in that long series that they had. It was kind of game six that I thought, well, I'm going to see if Chicago really wants another Stanley Cup, because the series was so punishing and demanding. And they showed me that they did, and they went out and they did it. So I look at the West as Anaheim is the team that I'd be feared of. And in the East, you mentioned the team earlier on in the broadcast, how they built their team as Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
If Tampa Bay doesn't have their one of their top scorers with a broken wrist and a goaltender who, even though they won't admit it, had to have a concussion at one point through that last series and was playing on one leg, it could have been a different series for Tampa Bay. So those are the two teams that jump out to me. But then I can never say, no, Chicago won't do it again, because they just keep doing it. They're like the cockroach that just never dies.
Is Montreal any better equipped to take advantage of the fact they got the best goalie in the world in his prime and go and make a really deep run in the spring?
Oh, yeah. And the other thing that Bergevin and John Sedvick do so well is they manage the cap. And managing the cap is important, because it gives you flexibility at certain times during the year. And that's what happened to them 2 years ago, when they were one of the few teams that had cap space and could go out and acquire some players at the deadline that really helped them through the course of their playoff run. I really believe 2 years ago, if Kreider doesn't run into Carey Price, that Montreal could have won the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. I think they would have been better suited to play the Los Angeles Kings than the New York Rangers were. So never count them out. And if Price has any type of an improvement over one of the best years I've ever seen a goalie have, I wouldn't want to play them. Any given night, if you're going to pick one guy to play net for you, he's the guy I would pick to play net for me. So anything can happen with that club just based on the fact, and they shouldn't apologize for it, they've got the best goalie in the game.
Which of the Canadian teams, Glenn, which Canadian team do you think is, we can essentially agree that Montreal's probably got the best shot of any Canadian team of winning the Stanley Cup, such as it is. Is there a Canadian team you're really concerned about beyond the Maple Leafs, a Canadian team that maybe people are expecting a little too much of?
I'd say the Vancouver Canucks are a team that I'd worry about. And internally, if you're asked the Vancouver Canucks, they're probably worried about them as well. They've got an aging kind of group of stars that, when they got beat by Boston in 2010 and got beat up by Boston, each one of their trades and each one of their draft picks was to beat somebody else up, instead of looking at their skill set and saying, we probably should add some skill to this lineup, because the Sedins are going to be over 30 pretty soon here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, historically, you get to 30 and you're a forward, offensively you slow down, and that's exactly what's happened to those two as well. So that would be a team that they know they're on the rebuild. They have to do it the right way, and they've, you know, made some changes to their scouting staff because of that. They've made some changes to their front office because of that. And that's a team that under Jim Benning knows that the best way to build your team is you get seven cracks at it every draft day. Every time you go to that podium, seven times you can improve your team. And that's not the case when it comes to free agency, where you overpay, or when it comes to trades, where you typically, it's dollar in, dollar out, your problem for mine.
Mr. Healy, we're going to let you run. As always, it was great talking to you. We look forward to doing this, and, let's see what the Leafs, let's hope the Leafs give us at least something positive to talk about.
Well, they'll work.
At least through the first month.
They'll work, and I think Toronto fans, for the most part, the most frustrating thing about last year's soap opera was, whether it was the salute gate or not the salute, or to lie about it, or to try to fight a fan on Twitter, or to mail it in on certain nights, that will never happen.
Mm.
And that's a good thing. Honest days work for an honest day's pay. That's what we want.
Yeah,
if you give us that, we're happy.
I don't think people are going to hate these guys the way they hated that.
No, I think that's probably right. I think that's probably right.
It could be every week we play the Hellbound Train. But that being said, it's a good piece of music by Victoria Police Pipe Band, so keep playing it.